One, two, three. Good morning, Tucson, and welcome to this Thursday edition of the Creative City Show, the day before Friday. It's a good day. This is your host, Zach Yenser, of the show. We talk about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. I'm Zach Yenser, and this is a pleasure to do this with you every day, Monday through Friday, 10 to 12. And I'm looking forward to the show that we have for you today. We're going to get right into it because we have busy people front-loading our show today. We have Edmund Marquez in studio right now with a Rio Nuevo District update. And then when he exits studio, U.S. Senator Martha McSally will come on to talk about her recent legislation to make domestic terrorism a federal crime. Very interesting development there. She'll come on to close out our hour. So good show for you today. 790-2040 is your opportunity to check in, call in, make a comment, ask a question, hopefully, of the two experts that we will have this hour in studio. Edmund, welcome back. It's good to have you back in the city.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Zach. Always happy to see you. And gosh, we had such a lively conversation before we got on the air. Man, we could almost done a radio show there.
I know. Yeah, and maybe some of it will, you know, kind of float over to the on-air part of our
of course
of our time. But man, lots to get into. First and foremost, want to talk about some of the recent Rio Nuevo news. We'd like to have you on the show to give us an update after board meetings on what's going in and what's happening. And there's a plan on the table to invest in kind of the shops along Congress. The big news, which I'll let you talk about, down there, kind of west-ish side. So let's get into it. What are some of the big things that Rio Nuevo is working on these days?
One of the most exciting things, and you've probably seen the news on it, the news coverage, is the Tucson Convention Center. Defining moment for Tucson. Defining moment. Last board meeting, we approved a loan of $125 million. Part of that's used to pay off some of our current, pay off and refinance some of our current debt. And we're also going to be able to have $65 million left, in which we're going to invest in the Tucson Convention Center. Tucson Convention Center was built in 1971. It's about 200,000 square feet. It really has not been updated for the most part since 1971, and it was built. And you can tell if you walk around the campus looking at the music hall, Leo Rich. I mean, obviously, recently, if you've visited a Tucson Sugar Skulls game or a Tucson Roadrunners hockey game, you've seen the arena. And we at Rio Nuevo have put $11.8 million into the arena as of late. And you can see it. It's modern. It's bright. Sound system's great. Looks fantastic. The rest of the campus is lacking. And probably one of the biggest pieces and one of the reasons I even get involved in this community is I want Tucson to be more competitive. And in regards to being competitive, we are the largest city in the United States with a convention center without a convention center hotel. So if you really think about that and you take a step back, we have zero convention business in this town. And convention business, for those of you listening, that's sales tax dollars. That's income for our city, for our county. Those are more dollars for the city and county to invest back into our community for infrastructure, schools, et cetera. Very important piece. So as we invest $65 million into the TCC, you're going to see more convention space. If you've been by lately, you've seen the groundbreaking right off of Cushing there for the Caliber Hotel that's going up. We're building a 300 parking spot, parking garage next to the Caliber, which no more trying to find side streets or parking at the police station when they're closed kind of thing. And then also we're building a 500 parking stall garage on the back end on the west side of the TCC, which is called Parking Lot C. So right behind the music hall, you'll have a 500 stall parking garage, multiple levels. That also might help us activate HSL's Hotel Arizona, which is right there in the gateway of downtown as you come off Congress. But we'll be getting into the ECPO landscape, ECPO fountain, which right now looks like an empty pool in front of the Tucson Convention Center, which I'm an insurance guy. That's just a liability. Having an empty pool is the beautiful people walk into the Tucson Symphony Orchestra, the opera in the middle of the, you know, in the nighttime, you know, hopefully they don't fall into the empty pool. But it's just pride also. I mean, if you visit the music hall nowadays, obviously it's a nice venue, has nice bones, but the bathrooms are outdated. The carpet looks like it's from a casino. Chairs could be updated. Sound system could be updated. And we're going to do all that. And we're very, very exciting. It's a defining moment for Tucson as we invest in our convention center.
So for a city of Tucson's size, and I like to say that there's only 32 cities bigger than Tucson in the country.
Right.
Tucson is the 33rd largest city in the country.
Bigger than Atlanta, Georgia.
I can't over-repeat, you know, that number, because I think our mindset in Tucson is that we're a small town, small metropolis, and where there's only 32 communities bigger than ours in the entire country. For a city our size, how much were we underparked and under hotel roomed even to today? I know there's work being done to work on it, but how much below kind of our minimum still are we in Tucson?
We have a huge opportunity for hotel rooms in the downtown area. I mean, obviously, if you're going to try to bring any sizable convention space here, we have the Caliber Hotel going up. We have AC Hotel that's up and doing fantastic. We have the hotels along the freeway, west side of I-10. Hotel Park, as a guy, I can't even say this one. Hotel Park City Center Hotel.
It's a long
one. I don't know if I said that right, but I apologize, Stanley. But we just don't have a lot of hotel space, so there's a huge opportunity there. So if you think about Rio Nuevo and the city of Tucson, we literally have hotel deals coming to us. So we're building another hotel, a Hilton property, right across the street from the cathedral. So the hotel deals are coming to us. Caliber came to us wanting to put one in the parking lot of the TCC, which is fantastic. You know, the Hilton deal came to us. So they see the demand, and I think the major brands, from the Hiltons to the Marriotts, et cetera, are seeing that there's a huge growth opportunity because we are, as you just pointed, a sizable city. So if we can bring that convention space in, and we can, you know, obviously expand the convention space within the TCC, we need the hotel rooms. So there will be more hotel rooms in the future coming downtown. You're also going to see, whether it's HSL's Flynn apartments that are going up, which I'm super excited about. I've seen the renderings. They're beautiful. They're going to be right there where La Placita used to be. So you're going to have market rate apartments coming in, a lot more residential coming in downtown, more hotels coming downtown. You'll have an upgraded convention center. Imagine staying in the Caliber Hotel or living in the Flynn and walking right next door on a Saturday and watching a hockey game or watching an indoor football game. You know, restaurants are continuing to thrive downtown. A lot of things are going on. And, you know, I was talking to a few of our board members a couple weeks ago, and I was really coming to a kind of an area of clarity and realizing Rio Nuevo is really needed. We need to continue to spur the economy. We need to continue to incentivize deals happening downtown. It's just very important, because if you think about, like, are you born and raised here?
Raised here, I'd say.
Raised here, yeah. There you go.
Moved here when I was 11, so basically.
Well, we'll adopt you, close enough.
Yeah. It's closer than a lot of people.
Yeah, it's so true, it's so true. We're only like 15, so that's 4 years. So if you think about the organic growth of our economy in Tucson, just organically, it feels a little slow-paced at times. You know, maybe we're not getting as many deals as Phoenix or other cities around us. So you need a Rio Nuevo. You need us putting together deals and incentivizing projects downtown so we can continue to grow and prosper. I mean, that also can flow into the conversation of, you know, why do we have a brain drain? Why do we bring so many brilliant kids from, you know, heck, from Phoenix, from California, from New York to come visit here at our amazing university, and then they leave? So if we can continue to bring in higher paying jobs for our folks that live here and jobs that will attract some of the kids to stay here, they'll continue to create new companies themselves. They'll innovate. You know, there's just so much more room for growth here in our economy, but we need to continue to spur it on with folks like our board at Rio Nuevo.
You talked about some of the, we'll bounce around for a second, you talked about some of the market rate housing that's going up. What is considered market rate right now in Tucson? Is there kind of a ballpark dollar figure? Do you know that off the top of your head? It's an off the top of the head question. So it's,
yeah,
okay,
so
to do it,
I'm not super well versed in this, but I do know that like 70 cents a square foot is, I think, average from just a conversation I was part of. I think downtown obviously will be much more expensive than that. I think you might even get to like $2 a square foot in some of the apartments. That there's a demand. I mean, so if you think about where this country's going in regards to development of residential and mixed-use spaces, gosh, I don't remember the name of it, but I visited a place just north of downtown in Austin where they had apartments, they had hotels, they had amazing restaurants, bowling alleys. It was all in one walkable area. That's kind of the future. You know, my view of where the malls will go in the future, if you look at like a Park Place Mall and let's say, you know, Macy's is gone, I think Macy's will be replaced with an apartment complex. I think people will start living where they can shop and where they can eat. I just think that's going to happen. So when you look at the downtown, it's kind of a microcosm of that, where you're going to have just everything walkable. I mean, imagine having a beautiful apartment downtown. You can overlook the sunset, and you're looking at a mountain. You decide you want to walk to dinner. You don't have to drive anywhere. You want to walk to the TCC. You want to watch the opera or Tucson Symphony Orchestra, or you want to see a concert. It's just all within walkable areas. And that's where this country's going if you visit the downtowns and the other cities. And it's going to happen here in Tucson. And you know, in Tucson, we talk about being the one big high school hallway, or we talk about being Mayberry with a million people. So we're still adjusting to it too. I mean, we freak out and we have to pay for parking. We freak out if we have to walk like three blocks after you've parked somewhere. But that's a reality that's coming. And I think our minds will continue to shift and grow as we start to reimagine what Tucson will look like in the next 10 years, 20 years. I'm so thankful. Here's a segue for you. I'm so thankful for the RTA. If we did not have the RTA and the funds that we've contributed via our sales tax to the RTA, we'd be toast. There's no crosstown freeway. At some point, even though in my own mind for years I've said, there'll never be a crosstown freeway. It's just not happening. We missed our opportunity. I think we have to start opening our minds to it again someday. At some point, what happens when, and not if, what happens when we're 2 million people? It's a when. I mean, you can only do so much with our arterial roads. At some point, we got to have a crosstown freeway. I mean, you're going to see, Broadway's widening's happening, which is part of a Rio Nuevo effort right now. You just saw Grant happen. We have to continue to adjust for the future.
When you say there's a demand for what's happening downtown, who are you seeing come into the downtown area? Whether it's a business, whether it's a person, what are the demographics of who we're looking at in the Rio Nuevo area?
So I'll go back a step. If you think about the Rio Nuevo strategy, and we've always kind of had our master plan, we first brought in music. When you bring in music, you bring the crowds. Once you bring the crowds, you can bring in the restaurants. When you bring in the restaurants, we kind of got lucky and got a grocery store with the Johnny Gibson's grocery store. Then you continue to build on the entertainment restaurants. And then at some point, you have to bring in residential, and residential's starting to happen. And then after you get to residential, you start getting retail. So that's kind of where we're moving towards. But when we're seeing demand right now from just the deals that are being brought to us at Rio Nuevo, I'm seeing companies want to move downtown. And so you'll see incentive packages like we did with Hexagon. We've got a couple others in the works with 75 East Broadway. But you're seeing people wanting to be there. It's a destination. And I think we lack that in so many ways. We have our natural destinations like Sabino Canyon, Saguaro National Monument East, Mount Lemmon. They're all nature related. But there's not a whole lot of retail restaurant destinations in Tucson. So I think downtown's becoming that. And so I think the companies are very interested in choosing a beautiful environment like Tucson. Even if you think about the university that's coming in to do their online, New Hampshire University doing their online kind of workforce here in downtown Tucson, they want to be in a hip area. People want things to do. I mean, if you talk to UVA students that don't stay, they're like, well, there's nothing to do. So if we continue to build a destination and downtown's our destination, you'll see the people wanting to work there. And at some point, they won't want to drive back to Oro Valley where they're living now. If you look at like Caterpillar, a lot of them live in Oro Valley. You're going to see people wanting to live where they work. And then they're going to want to play where they work. And that's what's happening with downtown. We're very fortunate that our downtown's blossoming. I don't know how many people you've talked to that say, oh my gosh, I haven't been to Tucson in years. I drove through downtown and it blew my mind. Like, oh my gosh, like, you know, just drive down Congress at night. I mean, I love visiting downtown in the evenings, walking around, getting an ice cream from the Hub or a Screamery, and it's just packed. And then it's flowing down into 4th Avenue. And what's cool, and Fletcher and I were looking at this a couple months ago, the arterial roads leading into downtown, which aren't part of Rio Nuevo's district, are organically growing now. And that's a successful sign of what's happening with our downtown area.
So that was actually a really good segue, because that was one of the community items I wanted to get your thoughts on. And I hear it here on the air. I hear it out in the community. And I'm reminding folks all the time that Rio Nuevo is a specific geography.
Yeah.
You know, right? And so when we say, man, so much money's going to Rio Nuevo, why aren't my potholes on the east side being fixed? I have to say, those are two different things. Geographically and financially, that's not where the money is going. But to that point, many will say, you know, we still have young people leaving. The incomes aren't increasing. The other parts of the city aren't keeping up with the development of Rio Nuevo. So are we creating this really amazing center that doesn't have, you know, the gas in the tank from the other parts of the community to really make it thrive? Instead of fitting that question into this segment, let's kick off the next segment with that question.
You got it.
And you kind of touched on it, but I wanted to raise that question and get Rio Nuevo's thoughts on it. We should talk about Sunshine Mile.
Yep.
And we should talk about the smaller business investments that I see Rio Nuevo starting to make, right? One of the things you hear is, well, Rio Nuevo just invests in the big guys. I'm starting to see a little bit more of the small to mid-size enterprise focus starting to happen out of Rio Nuevo. I want to talk to you about that as well.
You got it.
We're with Edmund Marquez, Rio Nuevo District Board Member here. The first part of the 10 o'clock hour on the Creative City Show. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Don't go away. Tucson, welcome back to the program. We have Edmund Marquez in our studio for the next few minutes. Rio Nuevo District Board Member. And we're here to get an update. We do a monthly update with Edmund about what's going on at Rio Nuevo and with Rio Nuevo. We talked about the big news about the Caliber Hotel in the first segment, and wanted to get your thoughts on something. We kind of hinted at it in the last segment, and that is, I think many would look at Rio Nuevo and go, it's great to throw a lot of time and effort into the downtown area, into the Sunshine Mile area. You guys actually go out down Broadway through Park, past Park Place.
Yeah, we pick up Elkhorn Mall and we pick up Park Place.
Right. So in a very small line, it goes pretty far out, but it's you know, it's not the whole city. It's a very, it's West Side, downtown, out to Park Place Mall, kind of a dog bone type shape. And I think I've heard a lot, you know, it's great that we're investing all of this into, you know, into downtown and Broadway. But is it creating development that our city can afford? We're still not seeing jobs that can pay. We're still seeing city and county not be keeping up on roads and parks. And so are we creating this shiny thing in the middle of an area that isn't yet ready to sustain the shiny thing? I thought it was an interesting kind of sense out there in the community. And you had some thoughts on that. I'm curious to get them.
Yeah, and I said it off air. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And I have a great story, and I don't think I've ever told this story publicly, but I got back to my office one day, and I had a phone message from George Khalil, bless his soul, just passed away recently. And he's a titan, or was a titan here in Tucson, Khalil Bottling. I always saw him at the UVA games, and I'm like, wow, this is cool. Like, I don't know George. I'd love to have a conversation with him. And I called him back and said, hey, George, this is Edmund. It's great to connect with you. What can I do for you? And he's like, you know, I really love what you guys are doing downtown. It's fantastic. Like, really, like just hitting it out of the park. And I'm like, well, gosh, thank you. This is an easy phone call. Wow. And he says, however, I'm like, oh, here we go. And he said, why aren't you doing that for the rest of the city? I'm getting phone calls from people. Why? What's wrong with the east side? What's wrong with the south side? What's wrong? I mean, what are you doing in the center of our town? Like, why aren't you doing more? And I said, well, George, we're a TIF district. Well, he was like, what's that? And I said, well, we have boundaries, and we can only play within our boundaries of the TIF district. It was drawn back in 1999, and we can't adjust them. We can't change them. And we literally can only invest within our TIF district because that's where we receive our tax income from the state of Arizona. He's like, oh, I didn't know. Well, keep up the great work. And I said, well, thank you so much. But there's so many times where people come to me and say, well, why aren't you helping us? Well, we have an obligation. The TIF district was created specifically for the development of the area within the TIF district. So it's downtown. And you're right. So we do, we go down Broadway. And as you'll hear even more so over the next year or two, we are going to be heavily invested in the Sunshine Mile, which is down Broadway between Euclid and Country Club. And we've already, in an intergovernmental agreement with the city of Tucson and the RTA, we've been able to pick up three groups of properties, the Solop property, what we call the donut hole property, which I don't know what the regular name would be, and the bungalows. You'll see some bungalows that are now fenced off and being moved. And the reason why there's an intergovernmental agreement, and think about this for a second, just put this in perspective, like think of Grant Road. I'm very thankful that they improved Grant Road. They widened Grant Road. It's really a nice boulevard or road now. But there wasn't any there wasn't any partnership with the surrounding businesses. So you see dirt lots, you see buildings that are kind of been kind of pushed back a bit. I mean, there's just some awkwardness of some of the pieces, like just probably just east of Stone. There's just some kind of awkward areas where they just had to cut through for the road. And in spite of the businesses that were there, it just didn't quite work in a symphony. Well, that's not going to happen with Broadway because we have the advantage of having a TIF district like Rio Nuevo. And by the way, Tucson, you know, you got to think about a great state of Maricopa up north. The Rio Nuevo district is the only TIF district in the state of Arizona. They do not have TIF districts in Phoenix. So we have a huge advantage. So some people that are naysayers, which I don't really run into many anymore, there's a huge advantage for us because we get to literally keep some of the state sales tax dollars from going up north. We get to keep them here and invest them in our TIF district area. So you're going to start seeing us play down Broadway as we play into the Sunshine Mile. We've hired a company that's internationally renowned called the Project for Public Spaces, and they reimagine areas. They reimagine Griffith Park in New York City, downtown Detroit. I mean, they come in to reimagine an area. And the beautiful part about this, and I know, Zach, you're involved with Menlo Park, it's proactive conversations with the neighborhoods. We're not just delivering to the neighborhood, this is what we're going to do. We've literally, like, we just had like 35 meetings with the neighborhoods. We flew PPS here into town to have conversations. And respectfully, we want to hear from the neighborhoods on what they would love to see, what they would not love to see, kind of what their vision is for the retail and office area and restaurant areas along Broadway that happen to be adjacent to the neighborhoods. And it's going really, really well, which is fantastic. So, but we haven't talked about this on Rio Nuevo, so I'm just throwing this out there. As you said earlier, we pick up Elkhorn, we pick up Park Place. Don't be too surprised in the future if you see us play all the way down to Park Place. We're allowed to. It hasn't been brought up yet. I'm just saying this as one of the board members, but there's an opportunity for us to play down there. And right now we have not because the deals haven't been presented to us. We don't come up with our own deals. They're presented to us by people willing to put in the majority of the risk, the majority of the money, and then we help with the deals. But don't be surprised if you see us in the future play down that far down Broadway. But if you think about it, for all that we've been doing downtown, there's been a lot of work done. There's a lot of projects that haven't been built yet, which I'm super excited to see downtown. You guys, you ain't seen nothing yet. Like, there's still more projects coming, but we're not done. And to also segue to where you were going, you're going to start seeing us play, and I'll call them on a micro level as we start playing with smaller businesses. We're not just here for the big businesses, but those are the deals that usually happen because there's a bigger ROI for the developer. You're going to start seeing us play along Congress as we're putting together a plan to reactivate Congress. And especially there's like, gosh, I think there's 10 properties that are vacant and dark on Congress. And we want to do whatever we can to activate that. We want Congress to be a very exciting, welcoming, high energy street, generating lots of sales tax for Rio Nuevo and our city and our county.
I mean, an example, and I work with this guy, a lot, Dylan Walker, common workspace,
okay.
That was, yep. That he came before Rio Nuevo.
Yeah.
And my awareness is he got a little bit of funding, because it is a seed into the primary job market.
Yep.
Right. So when you open a place up like Common Workspace, you are investing in dozens, if not hundreds, of employers and enterprises and innovative organizations. You know, but to me, you know, those are smaller numbers than I've seen Rio Nuevo leverage before. And the same tune would be those businesses along Congress. You know, to where even I was starting to hear from some smaller scale entrepreneurs, like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe soon we might be able to partner, you know, and they wouldn't have been able to before. Talk real quick about the goal there with some of those kind of micro funding strategies, if you will.
Yeah, and we're excited about them. I think if you think about Rio Nuevo, the perspective of the board members, and we're not elected officials, we serve at the pleasure of the governor, et cetera. We're here for the common good. We're here for the overall economy. And I want the smaller entrepreneurs to feel welcome to have conversations with us, because even though you hear numbers like the Tucson Convention Center and $65 million being invested, which is a ton of money, even if we said we're going to do a $20,000 investment, a $10,000 investment, and obviously we can't invest in privately owned properties. It's got to be a kind of a government entity, or it's got to be in our name. We can go deeper into that some other day, but we still want to look to see in ways which we can assist people to grow the economy and grow their businesses and grow the sales tax base for us. I mean, to be self-centered and selfish for a bit, we're all about the sales tax. Obviously, it's for the common good, whatever helps us bring entertainment and music and restaurants, et cetera, to downtown. But we want to help grow that area and help people prosper within the downtown area. And even for you being a Menlo Park guy, we extend onto the west side. Right. We're part of Mercado and those deals. And I think you'll see us play even more so in some of the smaller businesses, and happy to do so. They deserve an opportunity as well. When you look at Dylan's project, you said the right word. You said the word investment. We look to invest in these businesses so that they can continue to grow. And maybe someday they move out of Dylan's, you know, workplace and they go rent retail frontage on Congress, and their business is booming. So we're all in on helping.
Yeah. What are the kind of businesses? Is it a broad definition, or who would you like to see along Congress? What's the ideal fit?
Well, it's got to be sales tax generation. I mean, if somebody comes to us, here's a great example. You bring an apartment complex to us, and it could be big and grand, but we can do zero with you. It doesn't generate sales tax. So we love the coffee shops. We love the retailers. If you think about that master plan I talked about earlier, we looked at restaurants and we looked at entertainment. The last missing piece down there, besides continually building that residential, which we need the residential to have the base of individuals that can shop and eat, we're missing retail. If you think about Tucson in general, this is my personal comment, we're not super strong in retail in the city of Tucson, period. I think a lot of people, I think we're lucky that a lot of the people from Hermosillo and Sinaloa come up here and they shop and they spend over $1 billion a year in our Tucson area. But we can continue to improve our retail presence in Tucson, period, just with the type of stores we have, the shops we have. Obviously, you want to support local, but there are some, national brands too that should have a presence here and give us the opportunity to shop here. The more people that drive to Phoenix or order, you know, on Amazon or whatever, I mean, we're not generating as much sales tax as we can here. And as much as we've been considered by Phoenix to be the community of no for so long, we have to start saying yes to more deals so we can generate sales tax. And I keep mentioning sales tax because if you think about the premise of everything the city of Tucson and Pima County does besides property tax for the county, we have to have sales tax generation or we don't have an income. If you don't like the pothole, it's the sales tax. I mean, there's some, we got to have an income as a city and a county so we can continue to improve Tucson. And we can't be too scared of change in Tucson. We have to continually be improving Tucson so that we, you know, gosh, you look 10 years from now. I mean, think about this. Like, if you go back in time, we were competing with San Diego and Austin. Back in the day, they left us in the dust. San Diego left us in the dust with a TIF district, just like Rio Nuevo. They bought up downtown. But they had, instead of when Rio Nuevo got created and blew $230 million when, the, no offense, the city of Tucson operated it, that $230 million in the San Diego model would have been used to purchase the properties downtown. And then as they held onto the properties, they would have negotiated with the developer to build what they envisioned, with the developer putting in most of the risk, most of the money. And what San Diego did, if you look at the downtown area, they leveraged the parks. They said, I'll sell you this property. I expect it to be a beautiful first-class, whatever, multi-use property, but you got to build a park next to it. And that's why downtown San Diego is so beautiful. But we have to continue to compete. I think right now we're competing against Albuquerque and, you know, San Jose or some of the type cities right now. And we need to not only compete with them, we need to blow them out of the water.
Let's go to our live line. We have Robert on the line with a question for Edmund Marquez, Rio Nuevo District Board Member. Robert, go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the show. I just have a question. I know Rio Nuevo's been around for 30-some-odd years. Why is just the development happening in the last 5 or 7 years or whatever? What happened to all the money that Rio Nuevo had back in the day? And I mean, it's downtown is nice, but I particularly am not. I'm in my late 50s, not attracted to hanging around a bunch of, you know, younger people and going into bars and the nightclubs. Not nightclubs, because I think there's more bars than anything downtown, and I'm not really interested in that life. Are you guys going to do anything else, or does anybody have any plans for developing other parts of Tucson other than downtown? Because it's great, but it's a whole city here that needs to be developed.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first part of it, yes, Rio Nuevo was created in 1999. The Rio Nuevo board was basically appointed by the city of Tucson. It just didn't go well. They basically went through about $230 million with some infrastructure to show for it, but not a ton to show for it. The state legislature came in, basically said, we're going to take it from you. We're going to close down the TIF district because what was planned never happened. A lot of money was spent. Trying to be really nice on how I choose my words. And then they ended up, the state of Arizona said, wait, we won't take it back. We're just simply going to appoint our own board members for your local Rio Nuevo TIF district. So it came Rio Nuevo 2.0 basically came in, and a lot of lawsuits happened, which were necessary to basically find out whose assets were whose debts were whose. And then in the third version, which is what you have today, we're basically a CEO board. We look for return on investment. We look for economic development. We look for sales tax generation. So it's just, we're Rio Nuevo 3.0. And this one, you know, we're pretty aggressive with making deals happen and moving Tucson forward. We're about 10 years behind Tucson compared to some other cities. So we're trying to catch up. Second part of your question we kind of talked about earlier. We are a TIF district, which is basically downtown, a tiny bit of the west side in the Mercado area. And then we go down Broadway down to about Park Place. And that's the only area we can play. So that's our TIF district. Our dollars go back into our TIF district. We can't spend money in the south side, east side, north side. We're basically along Broadway and downtown. But that's a great question, though.
Yeah, we've got about another minute and a half with Edmund. I thought Robert made a good point that actually when the most residential that we saw in the downtown area at first, and it may still be that way now, was actually the, I would say, 45 plus community.
Yeah.
It's not quite yet been the younger set that's moved in because I don't think we can afford it quite yet. And that's not completely true. But I think we're still seeing that intergenerational group taking residence. It's been mostly older. And what I do hear from younger people is we don't want it to be just a destination. Again, to Robert's point, we do want the bars and the food and the entertainment. We want to be able to live there. We'd love to be able to live near where we work. We want to have good transit. We'd love to see the streetcar go more than 4 miles.
Yeah.
And so I think Robert had some good thoughts that you spoke to, and that I have callers as well who will, on the younger side, say, you know, I want to see more still.
We're pretty wide spectrum because you have kind of dorms on one side, and we invested in some low-cost senior housing by the TCC. So you actually go both spectrum. Just know that like 1,000 residential units are coming. So that middle-aged, younger age demographic's coming to downtown.
That's good. What we're seeing in some areas around the country, and I really have hopes that Rio Nuevo will be able to push back on this in Tucson, is construction is just so dang expensive.
Oh,
and so when you wonder why is all the luxury stuff going up? Some of it's demand. And this is Northwest, this is downtown, this is East Side. Part of it is that's the margin the developer needs to make money off the stuff between labor and material costs. It's hard to make a buck in development at a middle scale, I would say.
Construction, super expensive. An indirect role, it's Pima Community College educating our workforce so they can find the employees they need. And there's not such a high demand on labor, so that they're having to spend so much on labor. And it obviously would get more jobs for our folks here. So Pima Community College, there's my shout out.
Edmund Marquez, we're going to kick you out in a second.
All right.
Because I know you need to go, but I think we have a fun call for you, and I think you'd want to hear this one.
Okay.
Kristen on the line. Go ahead, Kristen.
Edmund, I just wanted to say I'm a direct beneficiary. I own a business in the Mercado District, and thank you so much for your wise investment of the money and spending, and it's just so motivating to continue to grow my own business and do well, and in turn be able to grow the sales tax base. So just wanted to say thank you so much for what you're doing for our community.
Oh, that is awesome. Thank you so much for the call and for saying that. We're so proud of the businesses that are growing in the area. We love the West Side. So keep on chugging along and keep doing some business and generating those sales tax dollars for us. We appreciate you.
Awesome. Kristen, thank you. And Robert as well, all of our callers. Edmund, thank you for being in studio, giving us an update. Where can people go to read up on this stuff on their own as well? There's a great newsletter that comes out. It's pretty informative.
Yeah, I'd sign up for our newsletter. You can go to rionuevo.org. And gosh, you just watch the news lately. We're all over the news for all the projects we're announcing. So we're excited. We're excited. You can also, the public are welcome to join us at our board meetings.
Right.
They're not the sexiest, but they're fun.
They are open. They're public.
They are.
Edmund Marquez, Rio Nuevo District Board Member, thank you so much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk to Senator Martha McSally about her legislation making domestic terrorism a federal crime. Interested to have that conversation with her when we come back right after the break. So don't go anywhere. Tucson, welcome back to the program as we are awaiting Senator Martha McSally's call here on our show. We just finished talking to Edmund Marquez, a Rio Nuevo District board member. He's one of the newer board members on that board. And we try to have him come in and talk about what's going on with Rio Nuevo on a monthly basis. They have monthly open public board meetings, which is, by the way, a plug. If you are interested in hearing what's going on around the city as far as Rio Nuevo goes, those are open. And if you go on the website, search Rio Nuevo, if you go on the website there, you can find out what the agenda is, when the meetings are, see past minutes. I mean, it's all pretty open and on there. And as you can tell, the board members are really open to having a community conversation. So whether or not you agree or not, or get excited or not, or Rio Nuevo is your thing, if you are passionate about the community and want to know what's going on, everything is pretty transparent and up there. So go ahead and do that. Let's go ahead and welcome in our guest to close the hour. Senator Martha McSally is on the line. Senator, thanks for your time this morning.
Hey, Zach, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. You've been staying busy.
Yes, we have. It's great to be back in Arizona. A week so far, visiting with constituents all over the state.
Yes. Well, I am excited to. I saw the news and I reached out to your team. You're working on legislation to make domestic terrorism a federal crime. That really caught my attention, especially in light of recent events. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit with you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So, you know, in wake of these awful tragedies that happened in El Paso and Dayton, there's been a lot of discussion of what can be done and at what level of government. I actually saw an article about the FBI Agents Association pushing on Congress to make domestic terrorism a crime, and I was surprised that it wasn't already a federal crime. It's defined in federal law, but if somebody commits one of these heinous acts that clearly, just like an international terrorist, someone who's, say, an ISIS sympathizer who's homegrown, if they're trying to intimidate a civilian population or, you know, influence a policy, you know, through terrorizing methods, they will get taken up on other charges, whether it's murder or kidnapping or whatever other crimes they commit, but not actually terrorism. So we sprung into action to lead on this issue, to draft a bill that identifies domestic terrorism as its own federal crime so that, you know, people will be punished for that crime. And it then will enable law enforcement to also better track the trends and hold people accountable, to call it what it is, and to then provide resources in order to stop these crimes in the first place.
Well, what's been happening up until recently without the ability to call it what it is? I know that's an interesting part that your legislation works to cover. What's happened in the past?
Yeah, so what they'll do is they'll bring them up on whatever other charge is going on, which is usually going to be at the state level. So, you know, they could murder, you know, dozens of people, but they'll be brought up on murder at the state level, not at necessarily the federal level. They maybe could be brought up on a federal hate crime, depending on whether that was motivated against a, you know, a specific group. But they actually, just at the federal level, they would find kind of these other crimes that were associated with the activity, but not the underlying of trying to terrorize a population or, you know, coming from either anti-Semitic or white nationalist, trying to specifically influence and terrorize a civilian population or influence policy. So that this will provide the feds another tool for prosecution for these crimes, to call them what they are and to hold people accountable.
When the news came out initially, this is probably about a week and a half ago, that you were working on this legislation, it seemed like Republicans in the Senate were more open than it has seemed to be in the past to discussing background checks during gun sales, red flag laws that would allow authorities to take away or take weapons from dangerous people, straw purchases of guns. It kind of seems like that momentum has died a little bit since then. I know you're open to expanding background checks, but wanting to preserve the Second Amendment rights. Where do you fall on this issue, and why does it seem so hard to get some common sense legislation done?
Yeah. Well, I think we can all agree on a couple of principles here, even though people have sincerely held different views and there's some political theater going on. But the first thing we can agree on is we need to denounce and hold people accountable for any sort of domestic terrorism, right? Racially motivated violence, whether that's white nationalism or, again, anti-Semitism. And that's what my bill does. The other principle we can all agree upon is that we want to make sure that those who are going to be violently, violently mentally ill or unstable or a terrorist, that they don't get access to weapons. And then the third principle is that we need to protect due process and the constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens. So conversations are ongoing. There's some federal potential element to this for sure. My bill, conversations on incentivizing states to have red flag laws that also protect due process. Discussions on how we strengthen the background check system, which these two shooters in El Paso and Dayton both passed background checks. How is there a place for us to strengthen the system while protecting the rights of law-abiding citizens to be able to, hand down their hunting rifle from a grandfather to a grandson or other circumstances that may come up for private transactions? So that's a conversation that's going on right now. There's certainly some state element. Governor Ducey has proposed the red flag law at the state level. And then I think as a society, we all need to agree, we all need to do our part, that when one of these awful crimes happens, often there were indicators beforehand. Again, in this case, in El Paso and Dayton, they had not committed any crimes before. They both passed background checks. So none of the legislation I'm talking about would have actually prevented those. So what else would have prevented it? What else can we do as a society, as family members, as friends, as Facebook friends, as, religious leaders and teachers, if we see somebody is heading down the wrong path, to identify that, to maybe off-ramp them to get the help that they need, to have some sort of intervention to prevent the crime in the first place? I think that's the kind of multifaceted approach that we need to be taking.
It seems like, and you may have already picked them up since the news broke about this legislation you're working on, that you are going to have some co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle. Do you sense an appetite in the Republican Party to figure out, as you've been trying to do, it would seem, kind of that middle ground between Second Amendment rights and, as you were saying, preventing this in the future? Or is that kind of a heat of the moment topic and you're kind of now wrestling to get the support you were hoping for?
No, as soon as we put out the word that we were working on this bill, I was contacted right away by a number of members, Republicans and Democrats, in the House and the Senate, and immediately by the White House, saying they were interested in our legislation. So that's a real positive sign. We're continuing to, get comments and feedback on the legislation to make sure that it's worded correctly, that we are not infringing on free speech, but making sure that we're honing in on exactly how all this is defined in order to meet the objective. And the conversations are ongoing on the other initiatives as well. And I think, I'm a thoughtful person who's, trying to identify meaningful things that we can do to address these issues, to prevent them, and to hold people accountable while protecting due process. And so those conversations are still ongoing. I know some people, lose track and move on to the next issue, but this is something continuing to have conversations with our leadership and people in the House and the Senate to see what we can actually get through the House, through the Senate, and sign into law to address some of these root issues.
Do you feel like there's support at this point in time, even from the White House level, for the type of kind of broad legislation that you're looking to do?
Yeah, I think, again, we all have similar objectives, and now we actually got to look at the specific legislation and identify areas that we can agree upon that are doable to get through, again, not just political theater, but we can actually get through the Senate, get through the House, and sign by the president. So I think philosophically, we all have, those who are looking at this for meaningful solutions, all have similar objectives. There are some people that just want to play politics with this. That's not helpful. So I'm talking to those who are meaningfully looking into this, to see what we can move forward and not lose sight of, the objectives that we have and move on to other topics.
You know, after the news of El Paso and Dayton, there was an interesting comment made by a state legislator about how Arizona was lucky to not have had a mass shooting yet, which of course raised a lot of eyebrows, considering former Representative Gabby Giffords, that really unfortunate instance that has really shaped a lot of conversation here, of course, Southern Arizona and in Tucson, which is why what you're working on is really relevant here. You're in a race where no doubt this issue, as you run against Mark Kelly in the 2020 special election. I mean, this is an issue, regardless of El Paso and Dayton, even, that would have loomed large. Do you feel like this work that you're doing pushes pushes that conversation in a direction that you'd like for it to go, and that is valuable to the conversation in this race at large?
Yeah, look, the campaign will happen next year. My focus right now is being a senator for Arizona, and I'm being consistent in the leadership that I had in the House on this topic. I led on legislation on mental health and improving access to mental health in the House that got signed into law, and I also led on legislation in order to strengthen the NICS system, the background check system. What a lot of people don't realize is the system that we have, if somebody is what's called a prohibited possessor, they're not going to pass a background check because they've committed a felony or domestic abuse, or they're not here legally, or they've been adjudicated to be mentally ill by a judge. We just assume all that is in the system, and it's often not. You see examples where somebody went and passed a background check that they shouldn't have because the federal agency or the state agency that has that information didn't actually put it in the system. So I had legislation. It ended up being called the Fix NICS system. It was a portion of legislation, a larger piece of legislation I had in the House that got passed into law to incentivize localities to put this information in the NICS system and mandating that other federal agencies put that information in order to protect communities. So I'm going to keep leading on these issues in a thoughtful, meaningful way. And those who are playing politics with this, I don't think that's helpful right now. Tucson, the community that I represented, knows these tragedies. Other communities are concerned that this tragedy could happen to them today or tomorrow. So what do we do to protect the public, get care for those who are clearly mentally ill and have the potential to be violent? How do we intervene when somebody is on that path? How do we get the support for families who have a loved one who maybe they're concerned about is going to harm themselves or others? And how do we protect, people's due process rights as well as we think through legislation at all levels? That's the focus that I have.
Senator Martha McSally, thank you for your time today. I feel like there is just so much consensus on figuring out all the room that we have that we agree on to get this done. And yeah, as a border community, I think El Paso certainly hit hard. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And I really hope that we can move the needle on this, because I think it's time.
I agree, Zach. And we'll keep you posted, okay?
Thank you so much. You take care, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
And that was my conversation with Arizona Senator Martha McSally here on the air. About once a month or so, I think it's been averaging, we get to spend 10 or 15 minutes of the senator's time here talking about issues related to Tucson and Southern Arizona. You'll remember the last conversation was about water and water legislation that she has been working on. Tucson, that takes us to the end of our 10 o'clock hour here on the show. We started off with Rio Nuevo District Board member Edmund Marquez, and then finished out the hour with Arizona Senator Martha McSally. If you missed any of that hour, go ahead and listen to the podcast at kvy.com. Click on the podcast tab or go to iTunes or Google Play Music. You can catch it there. Tucson, we'll be back for more in the 11 o'clock hour. Don't go away. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. This has been the Creative City Show, talking about people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. We'll be right back.